Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military thrive in their civilian career. Today's episode number 359, Hope Unseen with Scotty Smiley.
So I pulled my Stryker vehicle up just about 30 yards or 30 meters to his south. I'm facing east, he's facing west on the same road, just on the same cement road, nothing in between, no median, just cement. And again, I felt protected. I had a bulletproof jacket on, bulletproof eyes, goggles, had a helmet on, felt very protected, had my M4, and yelled at him to get out of his vehicle. And he just raised his hands off the steering wheel, shook his head no as he looked at me, and I yelled at him again, and then he let his foot off the brake. And that's when I shot a round or two, I don't quite remember, in front of his vehicle, and then boom, my world went black. And that's when my life truly changed forever. I woke up a little under a week later in Walter Reed Army Medical Center, blind the rest of my life.
Today's interview is both humbling and inspiring. Scotty, in the course of his active duty service, lost his eyesight. And after that, after his recovery, continued to serve on active duty, even though he was blind. Since his time on active duty, he's accomplished an unbelievable amount, all without his sight. Ironman triathlon, skydiving, surfing, being an adventurer of the year, working in an incredible job, writing two books. And so I think that today's interview is just a great dose of inspiration. One about finding one's purpose and redefining that when you face extreme challenges. Two about the importance of surrounding yourself with others who can lift you up and motivate you, encourage you during the darker times of your life. And then three, also always about finding the next challenge, the next obstacle to overcome, and most importantly, the next way to give back to others and to find purpose through service. I'm very thankful because today's episode is made possible through a financial sponsorship by the Carlson School of Management. They've provided us with the resources to produce about a half dozen brand new episodes, and it's greatly appreciated. I want to share a little bit more about them. Whether you're transitioning to a civilian career or continuing military service, an MBA from Carlson at the University of Minnesota prepares you for a high-impact career in business. Carlson is committed to the veteran community and provides the benefits, experiential learning, and network to accelerate your career. In addition to a resident tuition waiver, all admitted full-time MBA military candidates receive generous scholarships and stipends to cover expenses that may not be eligible for the GI Bill. If you are interested, you can either email MBA@umn.edu, that's MBA@UMN for University of Minnesota.edu, or go to beyondtheuniform.org. In the show notes for this episode, you'll find those emails and that information as well. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, there's over 350 episodes for free for your consumption and show notes that contain information about the Carlson School of Management, but also links to everything I discussed with Scotty today, as well as a full text transcript. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Scotty. Joining me today in Pasco, Washington, my guest is Scotty Smiley. Scotty, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
No, thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
So I want to give listeners a background on you, Scotty. He is a graduate of the United States Military Academy. He began his career as an active duty officer. While leading his platoon overseas, Scotty came face to face with a suicide car bomber. That was the last thing that Scotty has seen. He woke up in the United States at Walter Reed Hospital, blind and fighting for his life. Not only he had to learn how to live again, he also had to learn to lead. After fully recovering, Scotty became the military's first active duty member to continue his service as a completely blind active duty officer. He went on to receive a master's in business administration from Duke University, and he is taught at West Point. Scotty commanded a 250-person company. In this role, he used his skills and abilities to lead his team through dire circumstances and adapt to much change. The Army Times named Scotty Soldier of the Year in 2007, and in 2008, he won an ESPY as the world's best outdoor athlete. Scotty retired from active duty and now works in the financial industry at Drexel Hamilton. He's written two books, both of which will be in the show notes for this episode, Hope Unseen and Beat Feet. And so, Scotty, maybe to start things off, if you could take us back to 2005, you were injured in that suicide bombing vehicle that ultimately left you blind in both eyes and paralyzed on your right side. What do you remember about the attack and your injuries?
Yeah, like for me, I felt I was doing what I was called to do, serving my country, providing security to Iraq, helping rebuild the country. I'd just recently been married to my beautiful high school sweetheart. And you know, the leaving the freedoms of this country were something I didn't want to do. I understood that I was called to, you know, a different service, a service to help others and help support. And if it was to go fight insurgents overseas versus here on our land, that was what I was called to do. And it wasn't just the academy and leadership that I taught, but it was every day that I lived a life for the greater good. And one of the Army values is selfless service. But on that day, on April 6th of 2005, we were given a mission to find a suicide car bomb. And, you know, it's not any interesting information that we wouldn't normally have on any other day. It was one of the more contentious and hard-fought fights in the country at that time. A lot of the insurgents were trying to destroy the governments that we were setting up. We were part of the first Iraqi election. And every day it was either car bombs, individuals blowing themselves up, being shot at, rocket propelled grenades, RPGs, AKs. Like it was horrific. But on that day, it was just to, you know, find a suspicious vehicle. And for me, we had on-time intelligence. My new commander said, hey, there's a suspicious area. Go check it out. See what's going on, stay off the main supply routes, you know, obviously the most likely avenues of approach for that vehicle to hit. And when I turned a corner, I was traveling north, I turned right. So now I'm traveling east and I saw a suspicious vehicle. It was on the northern side of the east-west running road. It was just a silver Opel, a man, you know, his head was buzzed, you know, scruff, face was buzzed, was scruffy, had a gray shirt down to his wrist. You know, and honestly, just looked like an innocent guy just sitting on the side of the road. But the suspiciousness of the vehicle, the back of the car, the silver Opel was lower than the front. And so, you know, the only thing that I could really do is, you know, given the rules of engagement, you can't shoot anyone, you can't cause harm to anyone if they haven't overtly blown someone up, shot someone, or done some type of harm. And so the lack of intelligence, I knew the best thing that I could do is cordon him off, surround him, not allow him to escape. And if we can get him out of his vehicle, we can send either a robot in to check out the vehicle and figure out what was going on. So I pulled my Striker vehicle up just about 30 yards or 30 meters to his south. I'm facing east, he's facing west on the same road, just on the same cement road, nothing in between, no median, just cement. And again, I felt protected. I had a bulletproof jacket on, bulletproof eyes, goggles, had a helmet on, you know, felt, you know, very protected, had my M4, and yelled at him to get out of his vehicle. And he just raised his hands off the steering wheel, shook his head no as he looked at me, and I yelled at him again, and then he let his foot off the brake. And that's when I shot a round or two, I don't quite remember, in front of his vehicle, and then boom, my world went black. And that's when my life truly changed forever. I woke up a little under a week later in Walter Reed Army Medical Center, blind the rest of my life.
What was, I mean, I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes, and it's just hard to imagine, like, what was your reaction waking up back in the United States in Walter Reed and learning about the extent of your injuries?
It was one of the hardest things that I've ever been through in my entire life, and I truly hope is, for me, when I was in Iraq, I was in the best shape of my life. I was Ranger, you know, I had my Ranger tab, airborne wings. I had gone to the combat diver qualification course and as a cadet, it's a special forces scuba school in Key West, Florida. Best shape of my life. I had paperwork already finished. All it needed was my battalion commander's signature, where I was going to attempt to enter into the Ranger Regiment. I had plans. I had a future. I knew where I was going. You know, newly married to my high school sweetheart, as I said earlier, like, life was looking up. Everything was good. Everything was positive. My eyesight was, you know, 2015 vision or 1520, like, better than perfect. I was living my best life, and I had purpose, I had direction, and I knew where I wanted to go. And when I woke up, you know, less than a week later, of course, unfortunately, I was having nightmares, and, you know, it was not a fun trip over. You know, I was put into a medically induced coma. When I realized that I not only, you know, couldn't see, but no longer had eyes, I also was temporarily partially paralyzed because of the brain damage that had occurred, you know, from the blast. You know, I now couldn't even walk. I couldn't feed myself. I couldn't do anything on my own. And to go from such physical health, physical strength, mental strength, and direction to literally nothing, it was one of the worst times of my life. And unfortunately, you know, like many of us, I looked at my situation as, that's my situation. I can't do anything about it. So, I was angry. I was mad. I sunk into depression. And for me, I wasn't just more mad at my situation. I was mad that for some reason, I didn't feel I deserved it. I felt like, not that I could walk on water, but this was not something that I deserved. And as arrogant as a person as I was, that unfortunately was how I felt. And so I struck out in anger. And I remember one of my best friends saying, "Hey, do you want to pray?" And I said, "You know, I don't even know how to pray. And I don't think I know God." To where the depression and the anxiety and the stress, and again, went back to anger, was so severe. But for me, it was the love of my wife, Tiffany, always by my bed, saying, "Scotty, someday, you know, you're going to be a public speaker. You're going to write a book. You're going to, you know, be a teacher." I'm like, "You're crazy. You're crazy. What are you talking about?" But she always walked in my room with confidence, with faith, with hope. And again, it ended up, you know, coming back to myself and saying, "Scotty, you have the ability to make decisions. You have the ability to do what you want to do." And right now, I knew it, that I was the one deciding to be angry. I was the one deciding to be depressed. I was the one that was making all those decisions, though I was down a road that I never wanted to be on. That was still the road that I was on.
I can't imagine myself responding any differently. Like, I just can only imagine the bitterness and the anger and just the, depression, to say the least. And I guess two questions I have. One is, for, you know, fortunately, most of our audience will never go through anything like that. And so even though they face setbacks in their life, it won't be that magnitude. And unfortunately, there's probably some people in our audience who may go through a similar experience. For either one of them, that those types of people, like, what advice do you have for us about when we face that experience of the rug being pulled from under us, or feeling like we have to completely reorient our life and identity? What did you learn through the process that you would pass on to listeners?
For me, it wasn't necessarily what I was and who I was. It was those who I surrounded myself with. It was the relationships that I had prior to that situation occurring, and not just them, but the relationships in which I began to really put myself, you know, to put around myself, because there were negative attitudes. You know, I was now permanently blind. I was disabled, 100% disabled, unfit for duty, that, you know, my wife, Tiffany, was asked to begin the medical retirement process. She had power of attorney, and she, understanding my plight, my situation, where I was, she said this, she thought to herself, "This is not my job to sign my husband, whom he's made the decision to get out of the military. It's his job. It's his opportunity. So let him recover. Let him do what's needed, and then we'll have him sign the paperwork." And it was astonishing. Like, the military is not used to being told no. You know, high-ranking colonels aren't really used to being told no, especially by a civilian who, you know, had the power of attorney. And so I go back to surrounding yourself with men and women you trust. One of my best friends, a colonel in Special Forces, was there by our side to protect us. Had the Johnson twins, two SF. One was a tall, one was a shorter African-American, one was a tall white guy, but they had the same last name. And they literally protected me from the malice. Yeah, I'm not saying malice, but the outside perspective, in which wasn't allowing me to recover, wasn't allowing me. But for me, again, it went back to my mental mindset. How was I going to surround myself? Who was I going to surround myself around and with that would enable me to think right, to get out of that depression and to begin to think of purpose and to think of life? So for me, that's the number one thing, is just surround yourself with good, solid men and women who can bring hope, can bring faith, and can enable you to see the bigger picture. And for me specifically, it was a little boy, Andrew Harris, who I taught Sunday school at West Point, had heard about what had happened, and he had his dad come down and to say hi to me. And for me, it's like, how are you going to tell a little boy who you know looks up to you, no, you can't come into my room? And that's when I made a choice, like, hey, you got to get out of this, Scotty. You got to forgive. You got to begin to rebuild your life. And that's when my life really began to change. And yeah, I was still hard. I was still blind. I was still learning how to walk again. My recovery had just began, but it was that one little small choice, that one little baby step that I took that really enabled me to begin that recovery process. So those are the two things that I really encourage people to do if they are in a situation or they don't know what to do, is surround themselves with strong men and women, find strong men and women to surround themselves up. But then most of all, just have faith and with that faith to move forward with the purpose.
That's powerful. And it leads into the other piece I was going to ask about, because when you were describing the way that your wife showed up, it's eerie because all of the things she was saying, you went on to do public speaking, all she knew it. And just wondering your advice for any listeners who may find themselves in the position of being beside someone or close to someone when they're going through a recovery from what can seem like insurmountable obstacles.
Yeah. No, it's hard because my reality was my current physical health, you know, losing both of my eyes. I no longer could see my wife's beautiful face, her tiny little ears, her beautiful eyes. I couldn't see the sunset. I can't see rain falling, squirrels running in the trees. I can't see anything. Pitch black. I could no longer move my right leg, you know, temporarily, partially paralyzed. Like, my reality was my reality. And I didn't want to think my way out of it. I didn't want to see the future and say, hey, maybe you can recover. Maybe your eyesight you may not be able to recover from, but it still doesn't mean you can't do, you know, a million things that are possible. And it was my wife who stood by my side every day, speaking truth, speaking truth, speaking truth. And I kept shooting her down, shooting it down, shooting it down. But it was that positive attitude that always came back. And yeah, she was exhausted. She just, you know, pass out at night in the hotel room because it was exhausting. But it's having men and women who are there and continue to speak truth that enables a positive light to be shown. And it was that positive light that was given to me every day that enabled me to see that, hey, it's my attitude that I need to change. And I can see the future, whether I even knew I was going to be a public speaker, write a book, you know, get a master's and do what I did. It was more so, if that's my life, I need to look past my current situation and see where I can go and what I can do in the future.
That's awesome. I love that. What guided your decision to continue to serve on active duty? I think that that's just so incredible to see you give more than most of us ever do in service and then choose to continue to give.
Yeah, I think for me, it was a part of, I won't say a heart change or change in my heart. I think when I originally went to the military academy, it was one to get one of the best educations I could ever get in the world. I mean, the military, all the academies are the best education that the world provides. And whether I had a short-term perspective of, hey, do my time in the military, get out, become a businessman, I don't know. But I did know when we were attacked on September 11th, beginning of my sophomore year, just a few miles to our south in New York City, West Point was closed down. I realized that the protecting of this country doesn't come for free. And it means men and women put their lives on the line to provide that freedom, that security. And I realized, as much as I love my country and love, as much as I love that security, that if I was a part of it, or I could offer a little teeny tiny sliver of that, then I still wanted to continue my career. And I think also there was a little bit of a, you know, when you graduate from the military academies, you have to serve 5 years. ROTC, I believe, is 4 years. And I had only served 2 years. And so there was still a part of a commitment that I still felt I owed my country for the academic and the education that I received. And so it was kind of a two-part, but at the same time, I really believe it was just to continue to serve, to continue to give back. And I think part of that, you know, not just pushed by myself, my wife, but, you know, many high-ranking individuals, we began to see a change in the process at that time on what the military in its entirety, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, and Army, and how they saw very seriously injured soldiers, that if you are still mentally fit and physically strong, you can still give back. It may just be in a different branch or a different avenue, but you can still give back and be an amazing motivator to other military members. And so for me, it's something I was very pleased to continue to do, and was, again, very appreciative of my wife not signing paperwork in Walter Reed, in the back office, and actually enabled me to make that choice and continue to serve.
That's awesome. What was it like commanding a Warrior Transition Unit company?
It was a challenge. It was one of the best learning experiences that I've had in the military. You know, platoon leader, I was in charge of around 45 soldiers. It was tough. But when you quadruple that, and you're in charge of over 200 men and women, it's hard. And being a Warrior Transition Unit, it's the same unit that I was in at Fort Lewis. You're in charge of injured and ill soldiers or injured soldiers that are either going to recover, rehabilitate, and return to duty, RTD, push them back to their unit, wherever that may be in the United States or world, depending on where their next duty station resides, or going through their recovery rehabilitation, and if they're National Guard or Reserve soldiers, kind of enable them to go back to their unit, or like I had that same choice, was assist them in the transition out of the military to the civilian world. And so with that, there was a lot of, you know, behavioral health issues at hand in some of the, you know, I don't recall the specific percentage, but a lot of soldiers in which we had were fighting with behavioral health issues. And, you know, I understood that struggle because it was the exact same position and situation that I was in, along with the physical disabilities. And so for me, I try to use the example that I had had and that I had already lived through in being, you know, very seriously injured and having and providing that the support that I was provided by my wife, that I tried to do that to our soldiers. And sometimes I did have to offer them unfortunate advice, like no elective surgeries. That was pushed down to the command, which means that you may not get your ACL, you know, repaired if you're on active. There's certain procedures that we just couldn't do, and it's hard. But at the end, it was to do what's best for not only our country, the military, but in the end, the soldiers. But again, it was a great experience, and it wasn't any of my work that I did. It was the amazing men and women that I was surrounded with, the first sergeants, platoon sergeants, squad leaders, the nurses, the social workers, you know, the behavioral health team. That's what really enabled the company to be successful. And again, it was a really fun and really cool experience.
How did you know when it was time to leave the military, and what did that transition and job search look like for you?
Yeah, so I kind of went back over my career and just thinking of all I had done, you know, my wife and I, because each individual has their own experiences in the military and the family also. My wife says she served right along with me, which I think she probably gave a lot more than I gave with everything that she had to do. I mean, just imagine. I have to go to work in the morning. Guess who has to take me? My wife. Well, we have three kids, all three kids born in, three boys born in different states across the United States. We'd have to wake them up, put them in the car. If I have to get picked up at 9 o'clock at night, well, guess what? She's got to wake the boys up, put them in the car seats, and come pick me up. So the challenge, not just challenge, but the sacrifice of every military soldier is not just their sacrifice, it's also their family. And so after my company command at West Point, we were able to go back to the maneuver captain career course. My career was all sorts of backwards, from going, getting my master's, becoming a teacher without a company command or career course, and then having my company command and then going to the career course. I was able to get a position at Gonzaga University, ROTC. It was really, a great experience. But in the end, it was a climb I was doing on Mount Denali. I took some leave over the summertime and just the freedoms and understand, like Scotty, I just felt, you served your time. You did, a little under 12 years of service for your country. It's time that you move on to something else. Time that you've served your country. You've given what you've given. Your family has given just as much, and in my opinion, even more. That it's time that you move on. And so I think it was a culmination of a lot of different factors. A good friend, said, hey, why don't you get a PhD? You can get that at Gonzaga and kind of serve. And I read the small print and understood what that meant. And a lot of more moving, a lot more commitment. And I just think it was the right time for us. And talked about with Tiffany, my wife, and she's like, yep, I think it's time. Let's begin the new chapter and see where it takes us. And again, I can't thank the military enough for enabling me to serve, and especially the last decade, last 10 years, as a totally blind officer, just to be able to give back and to learn as much as I did. So just seemed like the right time, and I've never looked back, and it was an amazing experience.
Mm. There's so much you've accomplished since then. And one of the things I wanted to ask about was, you spoke to the U.S. men's Olympic basketball team both before their 2008 and their 2012 Summer Olympics gold medal victories. What was that experience like? Were you nervous talking to a group like that, and how did that go?
Oh, it was an amazing experience. Is the end, we look at our heroes, which is funny. I'll come back to that as we look at our heroes. But one of the reasons that I was asked, it was Coach Mike Krzyzewski, who also happened to be a United States Military Academy grad, I believe in 1969. And he had one of his players, who was my brigade commander, ask him, hey, do you have a soldier who has served and given so much that could inspire these men and really understand what they're playing for? And it was cool. It was great to see Coach Krzyzewski stand up in front of these, as I said, heroes that we all look up to. And he's like, the heroes that are in this room are the men that have the flags on our right shoulders. Mm. And he says, we want you to understand the reason you're playing isn't for, a shoe company, a drink company, a paycheck. It's for that flag that you all have on your chest. And so I want you to listen to these, these heroes, which he called us the heroes, that really sacrifice and enable them and enable the understanding of why you're serving and why you're serving your nation, why you're playing for your nation. And so for me, it was a really cool experience to meet them all and to kind of share a little bit about my story. I think what's really funny in conclusion is as I greeted them all, I have to look way up. They're 7'2", 6'9", and they're looking down at me with their hands like wrapped two times around my hand and like, hey, sir. Mm. Thanks for your service. And they're calling me sir. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense. And then I think about it, the average age is like 21, mm. 22. And they're looking up to me as an example of someone to look forward to be a hero, a hero to them. And so for me, it was an amazing experience. And I'm very appreciative that they were able to bring home the gold. And I was glad to be a little bit a part of it.
Mm, that's awesome. One thing that's just humbling is, to see also you've been this avid adventurer. You've completed the Coeur d'Alene Ironman triathlon. You've climbed Mount Rainier. You've gone skydiving and surfing. You've done all of these incredible adventures that most of us have not done. And you did it while without the use of your sight. And I'm just curious how that was possible and where that drive and determination came through from.
Everyone that knows me well say, you're always driven. You're always, after going after something big. And for me, it's more just continuing to live a happy and purposefully driven life, to enjoy every moment of every day. And if it even means putting a challenge in front of myself, whether it be an Ironman, which, you know, I barely had 12 minutes to spare, one of the hottest days in Ironman history, it was like 135 ambient heat off the ground, 105, 107 degrees. But it wasn't for the fact that it was going to be miserable, but more instead of a purpose, of a goal and an ambition to get something done. And for me, it's living life to its fullest every day, no matter whether I'm in the military, institutional banking at Drexel Hamilton, what I do now, public speaking, is always to live life to its fullest and driving to bring hope and change to others' lives. And for me, I've been given a second chance to live. God gave me another chance to live, and I'm going to live every day to its fullest and to its highest and to have as much fun as I can. That's probably why I do everything I do.
That's awesome. That's great. What is life like now with the work that you do at Drexel Hamilton?
Yeah, it's amazing. So I was an injury management major at the military academy and was able to get my MBA from Duke University. And just my, not just desire to learn and understand numbers, but to help businesses and individuals economically. It was so much fun to enter into Drexel Hamilton, which is 100% veteran owned. A little over 80% are service disabled veterans. It's just an amazing group of men and women that I work with that are veterans, but it's to able to help them out. And it's to able to not only understand numbers, balance sheets, income statements, cash flows, but then to help where I work, cash managers, help investments on and for companies. And so for me, it's not just the purposefully driven occupation I have, but it goes back to what I said earlier on what helped my recovery is surrounding myself with men and women that I trust. And if that's what truly gives me purpose, and that's what I'm even doing today, is working with men and women I trust, that we can offer the client what they desire. And we know that they trust us because of not only our service, but that commitment to a greater life.
Mm. And what's next for you and your family?
The next adventure, the next thing in front. I don't know. I was thinking about doing an Ironman, a half Ironman, but with COVID, it unfortunately got pushed to the right. Always trying to live physically, stay physically fit, mentally strong, seeing the opportunities of Drexel Hamilton, what can happen and just the extension of that cash management services. And then, you know, kind of on the same side, I always still publicly speak through Hope Unseen. The book I wrote back in 2010 still inspired to help not just businesses, institutions, churches, and people grow by publicly speaking. And so for us, both Tiffany and I, it's just to help bring hope, not just to our city, state, and country, but this world. As long as we continue to do that, we're going to be very happy and continue to live and have fun. And I look forward to the next adventure I have, though I'm not sure what it is, but I know it's going to be good.
That's awesome. How can listeners learn more, follow you, and support you in your endeavors?
Yeah, so hopeunseen.com is where they can follow me on personal public speaking, cool t-shirts, buy a book if you want to learn a little bit more about my story, kind of my memoir biography. But then Drexel Hamilton, you know, in banking, institutional banking, if there's veterans that are interested in banking, we're more than happy to do interviews and we're looking for strong, mentally and physically fit men and women that want to give back. And even those that are in the service now that are thinking about getting out. One, I can't thank you all enough for your service, but there's so many opportunities that don't be afraid of what's next, but do it with the same confidence and assuredness that you've done your service to our country. And we'd love to hear from you. So either DrexelHamilton.com or HopeUnseen.com. People can reach me. And then for everyone, just to continue to bring hope, especially in these uncertain times with coronavirus, with what everything's going on in the world, is we have to have hope. We have to have assuredness that we're doing what's right and we're moving in the right direction, and always to surround ourselves with men and women we trust, and we continue to live life to its fullest and have an amazing time.
That's great. Well, for listeners, in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.org, I'll have links to all of that, links to both of Scotty's books, and a couple of articles about him as well. But Scotty, thank you for You're an example to our community. Thank you for the ways that you just continue to give back and give back and give back and serve. It's really inspiring. And I just appreciate your taking the time to speak today with the Beyond the Uniform audience.
Oh, I'm honored and humbled. I can't thank you enough. And again, I thank all the veterans and servicemen and women that are continuing to serve. It's about standing together and that Army value of selfless service. It means something. And just, I can't thank you all enough. Thank you. And it's been a pleasure.
Beyond the Uniform is written and produced by me, Justin Nasiri, with help from our Chief of Staff, Steve Bain, and our editor, Kathleen Dillon. We are an all-volunteer organization and would greatly appreciate your help in any of the following ways. First, spread the word. Beyond the Uniform has over 330 podcast episodes and 15 on-demand webinars, all offered for free. Help us spread the word on social media, at military bases, or whatever gets this resource in front of more men and women who need it. Positive reviews on iTunes go a long way towards this as well. Second, sponsorship. Beyond the Uniform relies on sponsorship to keep us going. There is so much more we'd like to do, but we don't have nearly the resources to do so. If you know of a company that would like to advertise in any way with Beyond the Uniform, please send them to beyondtheuniform.org. Third, donations. If you're in a financial position to donate, you can find more information on the support section of beyondtheuniform.org. At our website, beyondtheuniform.org, you'll also find 330-plus episodes categorized by industry, functional role, and more. You'll find a link for live events, typically 4 per month. You'll also find both free and for-purchase books that take a deeper dive on topics related to career growth. Thank you for your support as we aim to help members of the military and their families thrive in their post-military career and life.